time, you're given the option of hiring somebody to do something, or doing it yourself, because your wife said you should do it.
Oh, those things I hate, yeah.
It's a small room.
My dad made that mistake. 2 years later.
Yeah.
2 years later. Sorry.
But I foresee an end. At some point. It seems to me that last time we were gathered, told me about what happened in the Senate. Remember that? Does anybody else remember that? Annie, do you remember that?
He said you're talking about Obama to me and I just can't stop.
Charles just said it.
He won 24 hours, you know. He's got his own TV station.
Really? What?
A satellite TV station that runs Obama as 24 hours. Channel something. 73. Well, I haven't watched it more than about a half a second, but it's all there. Travel through my 250 channels looking for something remotely interesting to watch. Very sad when the only thing you can find are quiz shows from the 1950s.
You gotta get TiVo.
TiVo's gonna do it.
Yeah, it take a whole week and then watch one.
Assumption with TiVo is that there's something worthwhile.
Sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah, well.
You don't have to be there.
Okay. So I thought that what might be helpful, because I remember, as we were talking about this, that I have a piece of video that shows this kind of stuff. But of course, that video was at home, but now I have it here. So what we talked about is that action potential travels down the axon, reaches the terminal, and causes what to happen? Causes what to happen?
Calcium.
Sorry? Calcium gets over. Voltage gating calcium channels to open, and then what happens?
Entry,
because her notes say entry of calcium. Okay, entry of calcium, and what does the calcium do? Binds the vesicles. They fuse with the membrane. That's fine. They fuse with the membrane. Okay, so they release the neurotransmitter, and then the neurotransmitter does what?
Diffuses.
Gradient. Okay, where do they diffuse?
The postsynaptic cleft.
Through the postsynaptic cleft to the postsynaptic terminal. Where? What happens?
Binds
the receptors. Opens sodium channels in an excitable cell, in a cell that is causing depolarization. What else might that neurotransmitter be? It's another option. But what would that inhibitory response be? No, not anything. Is that what it's done today? And how would it cause hyperpolarization? With open potassium channels. It's close, so you can. And then we didn't talk anymore. So, okay, they didn't fall asleep. I do this. Let it go by again. So we have postsynaptic axon terminal. Presynaptic terminal. Good job. We have vesicles with little black things in them. Yes? No.
Those are mitochondria.
Here's a vesicle with stuff in it. Here's the synaptic cleft. Here's a postsynaptic dendrite in this case. And here's some other mitochondria. These are closed. These are closed channels. Okay. And then on the outside we have some calcium. Sodium and some calcium probably, but let's wait and see what they are. Oops.
Specific channels in the membrane open, allowing calcium ions to diffuse inside rapidly.
Inside
the influx
rapidly.
Of calcium triggers the fusion of vesicles to the membrane, releasing neurotransmitters into the synaptic cleft. The neurotransmitters diffuse across and bind to the receptors on the postsynaptic dendrite.
Okay. Now, what's wrong with the video? What's wrong with the animation? Conceptually, what's wrong? The action potential comes from, that's okay, yeah, then what happened? Didn't talk about the grade, showed you the grade, said it diffuses. Notice what's happening here. They close. When do you think they close?
After the voltage
is passed. So by the time when the action potential is on the upswing, they open, and when it's in the downstream, they close. And what you notice here,
calcium-specific channels in the membrane open, allowing calcium ions to
Okay, so what Megan said is that according to this picture, these should be closed already.
Right.
Right? They're open. And the other thing you'll notice is that according to this picture, calcium doesn't move until all these channels are open. When does calcium move?
As soon as
it has a path to go through. Okay? So, right at this point, these are probably already closed. Calcium has gone in, and we're only looking right there. Channels being open.
Fuse inside rapidly. The influx of calcium triggers the fusion of vesicles to the membrane, releasing neurotransmitters into the synaptic cleft. The
neurotransmitters
diffuse across and bind to the receptors on the postsynaptic dendrite.
So the neurotransmitter diffuses across, gradient, binds the receptor, and the receptor then causes channels to open and sodium enters the cell. Now, you said there's nothing that shows the calcium going back out, right?
It just like disappeared on the screen inside.
Disappeared on the screen inside the hum, and it didn't. So what do you think is probably there to move the calcium back out into the extracellular fluid?
A pump.
And why do you think there's a pump?
It's got to fight a gradient.
Because it's got to fight a gradient. Okay. So you want to take the animations. You want to take these animations and those kind of models and those kind of, and the kind of causal diagrams lots of times that we make with a little grain of salt, because lots of things happen all together at the same time and we say that they happen sequentially. We have to be careful with that. Does this help to visualize the process?
Yes.
Now what we haven't done over here now is this is a dendrite. If this is a dendrite, does an action potential occur right over here and over here? Why not? It has to wait till it gets down to the hillock, where there are voltage-gated sodium channels with time and activation gates. Acronyms. I was just talking to a publisher this morning, and she was asking about a review book. A board review series that this publisher is putting out. People in New York have absolutely no sense of what time is around the world. So at 7:30 in the morning, my phone rings. It's young Miss McTavish. Is that a neat name? Rebecca McTavish. Does the name conjure up any kind of
leprechaun?
You see a little tail. She sent me some stuff to look at about this board review book. And so I read one sentence to her. It was kind of interesting because it had something like ECS. It said endothelial cells, parentheses, ECS. And then in the next line, two lines later, it said ECS. And I said, what's an ECS? And she said, I don't know. I said, see, you saved all this time, all this space, by not putting those words in, but that's a standard kind of word. You're going to have to keep abbreviating. So then there was a panel with three or four diagrams in it. One of them says, this is to help students make sense of things. They were talking about blood, and it says in one panel something about RBCs. And then the next panel talks about red blood cells. And the next panel talks about erythrocytes. And I said, are those three the same thing, or are they different? I don't know. It's really amazing how easily I can tell people what's wrong with the world at 7:30. Okay. So what we've said then was that What we said then was, what you told me is that I won't see a change at the axon hillock. I won't see a change at the dendrite because I have not yet reached the axon hillock. And we talked the other day about the length concept, right? Didn't we talk about the length concept? Yeah, well, so we did. We talked about the length concept. I remember. Because some people in the room here tried to give me some sort of a lesson about Greek letters. Like gammas and lambdas.
We had no idea what the answer was.
Oh. And we talked about this picture, remember? Alright. And we said that what the picture showed us is if we put some ions in here, they're going to diffuse along the gradient. And so they're going to diffuse down here, but there's less of them on the outside than there is on the inside, and so they're going to diffuse out. And as we move on down the length of the membrane, we're going to lose voltage across there. We've got a signal that we put in, and we decided that when we got to a point where we lost 67% of the initial signal that came through, we were going to call that a length constant. And we decided that if the length constant was long, what did it tell us about the membrane? It was less permeable. The membrane was less permeable. And if the length constant was short, then the membrane was more permeable. Okay, that's good. That's good. So now let's go to this picture. Now let's say that... Oh, we don't want that picture. That's the only picture I have. Let's say that... Here's a cell. There's the dendrite. And there's the axon. Okay? Dendrite. And here, you know what this is? What's this one? That's a what?
A dendrite.
We said, this is a dendrite, this is a cell, and there's the axon hillock. And then I drew this, and what it was it? It was... Oh, here's the axon hillock. What is this thing that I drew? It's another cell! Very good. So, we have one cell, and then we have... another cell.
Ask her.
These are very complicated things. We have to make sure we can tell. Okay. So now, here's what's going to happen. Now we have this. We have... we have an axon coming down both of those cells. And the axon is going to synapse with both of those cells, and they're going to open sodium channels in both of those dendrites and cause the depolarization of both of those cells. Okay? Sodium's going to come into both of those cells. Now, we're going to say that this length constant is relatively long, and this length constant is relatively short. And we will say that the voltage here, we'll say that's the membrane voltage, the voltage here changes by that same amount in both places. My question to you is, how much of this influx in this cell is going to get to the axon hillock compared to over here? More is going to get...
Can you try to write a little bit better? Please. Maybe just a little bigger. Yeah, bigger and better.
So...
Oh, that helps.
A lot.
Oh, come on. So here's the millivolts. That's better than on the board, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
It's real hard.
No, it's a lot better.
It's real hard to take the board.
Yeah, you can.
And just make it bigger. So here we have a signal, we have a certain number of ions that are entering this dendrite, a certain number of ions that are entering that dendrite. And what you just told me now is that more of the ions, or more of the plus charges entering here, are going to cause a bigger change down here in B than the same number of ions entering A. Right? Okay. So let's say that we have two action potentials that move down this axon, this very quick in succession. So what's going to happen to the total number of ions entering cell A in the second, by the time you get the second action potential down? I have an action potential coming here, I have an action potential coming there. So I have two action potentials. Okay? And they're coming down and they're arriving at cells A and B at the same time. They arrive at cells A and B at the same time. What is the effect of the second action potential going to be coming to the synapse?
Cell B will start the synapse.
Cell B will... Say again? Go ahead.
Well, if cell B is longer, then it's going to take longer to get across.
Oh, okay. But what I was asking really is, if I look at the dendrite here, what will I see at the dendrite? Will I see a comparable thing at the dendrite? Yeah. And when the second action potential comes down, will this cell dendrite be more depolarized than with one action potential?
Should be the same.
Should be the same?
Yeah.
Okay. What's the effect of the second action potential coming down with the release of neurotransmitter?
It's going to add to the first one.
It'll add to the first one. And why will it add in the first one?
Because you still have some of the ions left from the first action.
Because I still have some of the ions left in the cell here, and what is the second action potential going to cause to happen? More channels to open. So the channels are going to stay open longer if I look at that whole population. And more ions are going to enter the cell. Now, as a result of that entering the cell, the result of these differences in length constants, I may get an action potential started here, but not here. I may have an action potential started in cell B, but not in cell A. No? It wouldn't, not as many of the ions that came into this dendrite are going to stay in the cell and move to this point. So basically, in cell A, fewer of the ions that came in here are going to affect what's going on down here because they're going to leave the cell. And more of the ions that came in are going to affect down here because they're going to stay in the cell. So So if I look at these two and I have the same signal, what has the system been able to do by having a difference in the length terms? It's not necessarily adjusting sensitivity, maybe, but what's another way of saying it?
One's more sensitive.
Not regulating anything. Because remember, regulation said implied that we measure something. What are the possible outcomes? What are the possible outcomes in this system over here? There are two possible outcomes. And you guys are all computer freaks, so you should know these things. What are the two possible
actions?
It's what?
Triggered or it's not.
It's triggered or it's not. How about this wonderful new thing here? It's either triggered or it's not. We're living in a world of ones and zeros. So what these two cells have done, then, is made some decision. Based on the arrival of ions at the axon hillock. If one fires and one doesn't, it means that the signal coming in is given more importance or more priority by this cell than it is that cell. Now, take that simple example, multiply it by 1.5 million, 3 million. And if you think about the various combinations, just in that little piece,
yeah. See,
we have a lot of capability for processing a lot of different information and making a lot of neat kinds of decisions. So we see that the length constant, the change, the difference in the membrane between cell A and B, helps us in processing information in various ways. And we're going to see Spring Porter when we deal a little bit more with information processing. How other kinds of aspects really play a role in that as well.
So, for cell B, because it has the longer length constant, it's more likely to be triggered than A, and so it would take more synapses for a trigger response in cell A.
Okay. She said, okay, so. Cell B has a long length constant, which means that cell B has a long length constant, means that the membrane is not as permeable to positive ions, which means that the capability of initiating an action potential of this axon hillock is greater than it is this one. Which also means then that if we have more action potentials coming down that axon, that cell B will fire before cell A. And so when you have some summation and you have some way of adding, or making a decision.
Do the
length
constants of cells vary?
The question was, do the length constant of a given cell vary, or does it stay fairly constant? I think it's possible in various states that they could change, but I think of it more as an inherent feature of the particular cell.
Is your mic
off? Could you repeat what you said about the permeability of the cell membrane?
Sorry?
Could you repeat what you said about the permeability
of the cell membrane? If the length constant is long, so the permeability is less. If the length constant is short, then the permeability is greater. Because if the signal decays in a short length, it means that the ions have left, and the only way that it leaves is the permeability.
Right, okay.
Why what?
Ions are coming out.
Is through the permeability.
Do the cells actually have more channels to change their permeability?
No, because the channels we're talking about there are generally leak channels.
Right. I'm saying, do they have more open leak, for example?
Yeah, the one that has a shorter length constant has more leak channels than the one that has a longer length.
What I'm thinking is that cell A is, I don't, why does the success of cell B's action potential negate the success of cell A?
It doesn't.
Well,
they're independent.
Does cell A, is it like it dies out? It just doesn't have enough
force
or anything?
Yeah, let's, so let's
Ding. First time I've done this.
If, as we move along the length of the membrane, we lose ions to the outside, then in cell A, there are fewer ions that are going to arrive at the axon hillock, and so they won't have as big of an effect.
Right.
Okay.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Does the amount of ions that the cell receives give a significant potential signal? So when there's a higher concentration of ions in the cell, does it give more, does it stimulate the cell more and results?
I'm not sure what you're asking, but hold on a minute.
It diminishes.
Hold on a minute. I think I have an answer to your question for the next speaker.
Does the length constant change for different cells when different ions?
I think of the length constant for a particular cell as being fixed.
No.
Yeah, the length constant depends on a number of leak channels that will allow positive ions to move through. So if there are if one cell has more leak channels for sodium and another cell has more leak channels for potassium, then they won't necessarily behave in the same way. Yes. Yeah. So she says the length constant is really not a measure of how long the membrane is. It's really a measure of how easily ions move out of the membrane. And so it's really a measure of permeability or conductance. Okay, let's look at, and we got this, I think, answers part of your question.
Hold that thought,
and we'll talk about it in a minute. Because yes, you're on a subject. Okay. Well, I'm going to find a way to let this work.
Does it make your hands fall?
Does what make my hands
fall?
The way that my calendar's not there. My calendar weighs less than your phone. Okay. So let's take the steps that you're talking about in two or three steps, okay? We'll take the things that you're talking about, because they're all relevant. In this case, you see, we have an excitatory synapse in A and B. Now this is on the same cell. So we're not really talking about length constant at this point, but we are talking about action potentials coming down A or coming down B at the same time or different time. And we're going to see now how things sum or add together. So in this one, we see that at one point, an action potential comes down A. It causes channels on the dendrite to open, and we have a depolarization, and then that decays. After which, we have another action potential coming down there, and you see that the second signal is just like the first signal because there's been time enough between the two action potentials to have that signal decay. What about in the second panel? In the second panel, we see that the A's are closer together. We see that the A's are closer together, and as a result of that, not all the ions have moved away from that region by the time the second action potential comes down. And as a result of that, I end up with a greater depolarization. Now, these two action potentials are coming down at the same location at different times. What would you call that kind of summation? The time summation. Temporal summation. So that's a temporal summation. And what's the other possibility?
Spatial.
A spatial summation. So here we have an action potential that's coming down, and B, and the depolarization is the same as it is at A, because it's the same kind of thing. But now, in addition, at this point in time, I have a second coming down, I have one coming down at A and one coming down at B, and what you see then is the membrane potential changes. And so I have summation in space, so I have a spatial summation. We're going to talk much more about that later on. The reason we want to talk about it now is just to get the idea of summation there. And
can you reiterate what the temporal summation is?
Temporal summation is summation in time.
Just time.
Yeah.
Go.
So, on this thing, B's can go back.
Okay, that's the summation in time.
A, for some of those, doesn't get high enough. It's coming down. It's a little bit lower. One still can't go. One still can't go.
That's the summation of space. It's happening in two different places.
How does that fit on the chart?
So on the chart, what we see here is A and B. Okay, here's B alone. And A and B come at the same time. It's bigger than B by itself or A by itself. It doesn't really show that well. But now, this is, I think, what you were talking about in different ways. Because here you have a synapse, okay? And here you have an inhibitory synapse. You have an inhibitory synapse there, and now here's the axon hillock right here. So let's say that A, you have an action potential comes down A and excites the thing, and at the same time an action potential comes down C. How much of that excitatory signal is going to get to the axon hillock? All of C. Okay, so let's see what's happening in C. We said it was an inhibitory synapse, so one of the ways that we said that would happen, we said that an inhibitory synapse might cause potassium channels to open, right? Because potassium channels are open, I'm going to have more potassium leaving the cell. And we said that the A caused sodium channels to open. So if I have no action potential coming down at C, and I have an action potential at A, sodium channels are going to enter, the cell is going to depolarize, and depending on how much signal there is, I may or may not get an action potential here. Let's say we do. Okay? Did you follow me there?
Yeah.
No.
Action potential comes down here, cause you got voltage gated calcium channels, so calcium channels go out, cause release or entry of calcium, causes vesicles to move, causes exocytosis, neurotransmitter binds to receptors that now open sodium channels. Sodium channels are open right there, and sodium rushes in. Sodium comes in because of the gradient. So now there's a depolarization in the cell membrane, in the cell. And we're saying that that depolarization is going to be sufficient to allow this depolarization of the axon.